Before we get to today's Survivor recap with Zeke Smith, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, and those are our friends over at True Car. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does that actually mean? Good question. Same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you know exactly what you'll pay for the car that you want, including the fees and the accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one that you want, all from the comfort of your own home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car that you want, and your certified dealer knows this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who was an ugly baby. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Very excited to have a wonderful guest with me back here in the studio. I thought this day would never come. I thought that we would not ever get the Survivor recap with this man, but he is back here. He had a taste of it at the Big Brother celebrity recapping, and he said, you know what? I want to come back. Here he is, the great Zeke Smith. Zeke, how are you?
I'm great. I'm great. You know why I'm great? I'm great because I'm a Survivor fan once again.
Yes.
It's been, you know, I was this huge fan, and then I went and did it, and for like 2 years, Survivor, which was once my escape. It was my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. The clock counted down to Wednesdays at 8,
yeah.
And then Wednesdays at 9:15 when I get to watch live know-it-alls. I love Survivor. Like, when I didn't want to think about work, or I didn't want to think about why my life sucked, I would think about Survivor and how I would play. And then I went and did it, and it was this, like, it was the most, Survivor became the most stressful thing in my life for a very long period of time, and I tried to get back into it for 35, but I was having none of it. Mm-hmm. I would watch the episode, and it would stress me out so much, I'd have to go talk to my therapist. Like, so I had to put it down. I had to put Survivor away, and I worried that I was going to lose Survivor forever. And then I think I got over it. And now,
but what happened in between Survivor 35 and 36?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think that I just needed more distance from, because I think, you know, two, and I would give this piece of advice, because now the show is committed to casting fans. I think more and more members of this community are going to end up on the island, mm-hmm. and then end up with this dilemma of, I'm not a fan like I used to. I'm a former player. And what does that mean? And I think for 35, I so wanted to be the former player that I wished was commenting during my two seasons, yeah. Right? To be considerate that, you know, the edit doesn't show anything and give me credit for the moves that weren't shown, but, you know, all this stuff. And I think you have to, once you're in former player land, you got to just give up all the compassion you have for the current players. Right. Because mm-hmm. current players, if you're listening, it's your fault if you continue to listen. And it's your fault if you're upset by the things that
do you
I say about you.
That,
so turn it off.
Check out. You think that
don't listen.
That will preserve the love of Survivor? Or do you feel like that? Is it almost impossible to be somebody who loves Survivor, be a fan like that, and then go out and play and keep that? Is it like the post-game analysis, or is it the actual seeing how the sausage is made?
I think it's, well, no, because playing Survivor, actually going and playing, that's the best part. No one comes home a bigger Survivor fan than when you just get off the island. I feel like the experience is better than you dream it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's the watching it air and have everybody yammer at you. Right. That's what sort of destroys Survivor for you.
That was the dumbest move I've ever seen.
Right. And I think because if you're a fan and going to play, this is a tremendously personal experience. You've been dreaming about this for years. You're going, it's like playing in the Super Bowl, right? You're going and living this epic thing, and it doesn't work out the way anybody wants it to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you win, it's not as great as you.
Even if you win,
I think, yeah.
How do you know?
I wouldn't know. I just, you know, I've seen former winners,
mm-hmm.
and they seem to struggle with the airing of it in the commentary as much as anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it took me a little bit to be able to look back and like laugh at it.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't think, like, I didn't have the ideal Survivor experience. No one does. but it was so personal and so raw. And I took everything so seriously, and I wanted to fight every Twitter comment that I got. And every time anyone made a piece of analysis, I was like, no, but if you only knew, or if you saw. And then I think now I've just had some distance and I can laugh about it. I also think watching Celebrity Big Brother helped.
Yeah.
Because I was so unconnected to those people, wasn't worried about meeting them.
You were so into it. I saw you were at a taping of it as well.
Oh, my God. So, as speaking of winners, Adam Klein really hooked us up, got me, Dave, and Hannah into a taping.
And he still loves Survivor.
And he still loves Survivor. Yeah, of course Adam loves Survivor.
Yeah.
But, you know, he won.
Yes.
But Adam had a very hard experience himself.
Sure.
Yeah, we got the VIP treatment. We got kind of taken backstage and really shown the works. And I think it reminded me. So I got so mad when Ross lost. I got really like irrationally upset and angry. I'd made a new friend here in LA, and I was so rooting for Ross, and he was rooting for Marissa. And when I saw that Ross lost, I'd been texting with him throughout the episode. And then when Marissa beat Ross, I hated it. I hated that because Ross played the game that I would have always wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And it was so made me angry that the jury didn't reward
him. I think
you
would have owned your game more.
Maybe. I feel like he did. I don't know. Bitter jury. It's their fault. And so I texted my friend. I said, hey, congratulations on your person winning. Let's just leave it there. And then he proceeded to like text me like text after text after text after text defending Marissa's win. And I didn't respond to any of it. And I still haven't texted him back. And I think I might have lost a friendship over Ross winning.
Over Ross versus Marissa.
But, which I know is so silly, but, you know, Big Brother and Survivor used to provide such joy to my life. And I had it back. Like, I cared. I was into it.
Yeah, maybe it was.
And I want that again with Survivor.
And we're not going to talk about Big Brother here today. People will be triggered. But in terms of that you were able to watch something that you felt like you had this knee-jerk reaction to, oh, no, I don't want to touch the hot stove again. I can't do Survivor. But you had something that was Survivor adjacent.
Right.
And then it was fun. And you said, oh, okay, well, maybe that this immersion therapy of Big Brother, it's like, oh, okay, I think I can do Survivor now.
Right. I also think this is just the coolest season.
You love it.
Ghost. Oh, I love it. I love Ghost Island. I love, there's like a vibrancy, I think, both with the cast. I love this group of oddballs. They sort of remind me of the millennial Gen Xers with their, like, their wide-eyed enthusiasm at like tribal council, which is, that's the most amazing tribal council that I've ever seen. I think there's a bigness and an epicness with this season. There's an infusion of energy. And I think we're getting to see, you know, Survivor is constantly changing. Mm-hmm. It's constantly mixing things up. And something that I love so much from this episode is the drone shot at the beginning of the challenge. It starts tilted up at the tree and then flies back over the challenge. It's just so amazing to watch. Every part of Survivor is so fantastic. And yeah, I think I just was like, stop being a negative Nancy, love Survivor again. And I'm so happy to be back.
Yeah, this is really fun with this group that they have out there. And, you know, for my money, I think they could just do new players from here on out. I think maybe all winners, you want to do that, that's fine. But I just love, even just like, I used to think like all the time, like, oh, we want all stars. But it's more fun for me to podcast the show, I think, with the new players.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a freshness and an enthusiasm and a willingness to play. And I think that what all stars know is that you actually don't want to be making big moves and creating splash, and you want to be hiding and chilling. But that doesn't make for good Survivor seasons. That makes for game changer seasons. Mm-hmm. And we all know how great that worked out.
Right.
But give me fresh players with interesting ideas about Survivor who want to play creatively, who want to make their mark. I think that's going to give us the best television.
Okay. So I want to touch on a little bit of the events from last night. Well, I want to touch on a lot of the events from last night's episode, to be frank, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Really? I thought we were just going to rehash the premiere for the 13th time.
No.
Dang
it. Is that a shot?
Wait, what? I'm just saying there are 9,000 podcasts on this network. For 40, I guess for the premiere, you had what, like probably like 84 minutes of television.
Yes.
But for 42 minutes of television, you put in what, 30,000 hours of podcasting?
You think we're doing too much?
Look, if there's a market for it, if people are consuming it,
scale it back.
I have scaled back my consumption of RNGP. But look, if there's a market for it, baby, keep reading your LaCroix ads.
Yes. Well, you're going to set me up for a promo here in a minute, but it's a la carte. It's whatever you want to, you want to just consume the know-it-alls or whatever, or just this piece. That's fine. Nobody, I'm not forcing anybody to like download them all, but you only have to listen to the ones you want.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, can I also, there's another reason why I'm so giddy to be here.
Why is that?
And that's because I'm wearing my favorite piece of clothing, which is my Wiggler's Wombats hat.
Yes. Yes. Tell me about the hat you're wearing.
All right. So it's a navy blue hat.
We really teased people that we were going to start talking about the episode.
We got so close.
Yes.
Well, it's a navy blue baseball cap with orange writing that says Wiggler's Wombat, which identifies me as a member of Wiggler Nation or of Wombat Nation. Wiggler Wombat Nation and Wombat Nation. Hashtag Wombat Nation. And I just have to say,
shouldn't it be Wombat World?
Look, I'm not head wombat. Josh Wiggler is. So okay. I just follow orders. I have the best, I mean, arguably the best hair in the world, at least in the Survivor world. And I never put a hat on top of this miraculous plumage.
Yes.
Unless it's worthy of that. And today I wear the only hat that I will ever put over my miraculous hair, which is my Wiggler's Wombat hat.
Yes.
And as you know, it's a reward for the winner of the wand off. Weekly winner of the wand off. And I know some people have hated on the Wiggler Wombat hat. I won't say who, but I think our HAP nation should get excited about Wombat Nation.
Well, let me just tell you, as I told you downstairs, I think that you look great. I love this look that you have, your hair sticking out in the front, and the hat is at an angle that I can only see the underside of the hat, and I can't even see what's at the what's on the other side of that brim. And from this angle, this is a fantastic hat.
But see, I know what is above the brim.
Yes.
And when I give you my shade look of shame,
I don't like that as much. You can definitely
see the Wiggler's Wombat. And I know what's up there, and it fills my heart with joy and pride. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Okay. Now, you were coming here. What do you have going on the rest of the day?
The rest of the day? Well, I have more. I have to go home and I have to write, which is what I do every day.
Yes.
And then I'm having dinner with a guy.
Yes. When you go out in public then later, will you continue to wear your new hat?
You bet your butt I will.
Okay, well, so I'd love to send me a picture from out in the field.
I will.
With your hat on. Okay.
I'll send you text message updates.
Yes, send me text message updates for that beautiful Wiggler's Wombat's hat that you're wearing.
You know, there's a note of sarcasm when you say
there's
beautiful,
no.
And there shouldn't be.
No.
Because it is.
No. Well, we should get Nicole up here to get Nicole's views on the hat.
Well, fine. If you need to call your wife in to defend yourself, Rob, then let's call your wife. You need to ask permission to go potty too.
No, maybe that'll be we'll get a video downstairs later on about that. Okay, so we have to get to this episode.
All right.
I feel the angry tweets coming at me already. I feel the Reddit thread starting of like, oh my god, they didn't even talk about the episode yet. So Zeke, talk to me about this episode, because I, on the second viewing of this, and again, one of the hard things about doing the know-it-alls right after the episode is I just watched the episode and it's like, boy, that was a lot of stuff that happened. And, you know, sometimes it takes me a little bit of talking it through with Steven to really come down on it, because this was a very complicated
third
hour of the show.
Yep.
But what was striking to me on the rewatch was just how much luck played a factor in what happened last night. And we had that rock draw, and it's great that we're talking about rock draws because you're here.
Yep.
And I thought that maybe the ultimate vote might have been coming down to a rock draw last night when we were going headed towards potentially a 4-4 split. But we had a rock draw on the Ghost Island draw, and this was something that was not on anybody's radar of, after the tribe swap, what happens if we have dissent among the people deciding who goes to Ghost Island? And Survivor solves that problem with, we will go to a bag of rocks.
I love it. I love it when Jeff pulls out a bag of rocks. Makes me feel all happy and excited inside. And I think that, you know, look, this season of Survivor has made the game, has made the gods an active character in Survivor. And I believe in the Survivor gods. when I was out there, I used to, you know, pray to the survivor gods in Jeff Probst's name, amen. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the gods, they frown upon the game and they will throw chaos towards the game. I think they also will smile down upon the game, and the survivor gods are smiling down upon us and smiled down upon us when Chris threw that white rock. I thought it was great. You couldn't have asked for a better person to get sent to Ghost Island.
Yeah, because it did seem as though he may have been somebody whose name was coming up. That it, you know, it seemed like that you had these two people, and for Morgan, from my exit interview with her, from what I was able to tell, she was saying how that there was this big split going on in the VT from that there was the Dominic side and then there was the Chris side. Had they gone to a tribal council beforehand, and it seems like that was going to play out with this new swap tribe as well, had they gone to that tribal council.
Right. And I think that's what Ghost Island has provided us story-wise, has been so great story-wise, is that thus far it's taken the person who was the most likely person to get voted out and taken them out of the equation so that we have to get the story has to change. The vote has to change. And we don't get the person who would obviously go out in that episode. And it's throwing a lot of like kinks and turns into the story and producing, I think, three pretty fantastic episodes thus far.
Okay, so we had the moment, and I had mentioned on the note, I wish we would have seen more of this, but Bradley is saying, okay, we want to send Donathan. Does anybody dissent to that? And Stephanie Johnson says, yeah, I dissent to that. Do you feel like that she, in the same way that you and people in your season were willing to go to rocks to potentially settle this stalemate, do you feel like that she felt like, because it is a 5-4 disadvantage for the Malolos that are on the other camp,
right,
that it was better to have a 4-9 chance that maybe this ends up going to a tie vote as opposed to, and they had no idea what was going on,
right,
but that they could presume that, okay, well, the Malolo on that group, just like in our group where they really did have a numerical disadvantage, are screwed here. So better and hope that one of the old Navidi pulls a rock. Like, do you think it was that calculated on her part, or whoever the Malolo who were making that decision came up with that?
I would think so. And I guess I would put a different spin on it, which is to say, regardless of what is going on internally on either tribe, you still want the perception that you're going original tribe strong, that you are Manolo strong or Navidi strong.
Yeah.
So even if things are, so let's say things are getting broken up and changing on the new Manolo?
Like Manolo? Malolo.
Malolo, not like Manolo Blahnik, Malolo. On the new Malolo tribe, you still want to signal to all your people over there that we're staying strong. You always want to maintain the politically correct stance, and that is definitely the politically correct stance to say, no, we are staying divided by tribes. I think that behooves everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's smart to not sacrifice one of your people.
So I had thought, and when I initially watched the episode, that maybe they were trying to protect a certain person by saying, like, okay, I know I want this person to go. But ultimately, just the act of dissenting, I think that for the group that is in the minority position, I think that they should always force the rock draw.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, there's no question.
Yeah. I said this last night. Do you think that we will see a rock draw for every single Ghost Island selection moving forward until the merge?
I think it's highly possible.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there is someone. I mean, I guess it's hard because we're going to swap again. I mean,
right.
We have to assume that there's going to be another swap.
Yeah,
so
we'll probably get down to five. Maybe when we get down to five, that there might be a group of five that's like aligned of like maybe that you could have people from like two different tribes.
There's like one person that everybody wants to protect.
Right. Either wants to protect or wants to take out of the voting equation.
Yes. Yes. I guess that's a good way to put it, too.
Yeah. So it's complicated that it really has. And I didn't think that Ghost Island, I thought that it was going to be, ooh, there's going to be little treasures at Ghost Island. But in three episodes so far, that really the act of sending somebody to Ghost Island has been the more important change to the mechanics of the game. Taking somebody out of the equation.
Yeah, taking someone out of tribal, because it's been, forgive me, it's been a while since Exile was played, and whoever was sent to Exile Did that didn't also give them immunity from the vote?
No, I don't think it ever has, outside of like isolated instances where there has been I want to say like in. People kill me if I get something like this wrong, but I feel like that back in like Survivor Panama, I feel like that, did Bruce not get drafted and he went to exile and got to skip the vote and then came to whatever tribe?
Right. I guess like when Debbie went to Cochrane boat exile.
Yes, but did she miss a vote? I think she went from a reward challenge. I don't think she ever.
No, she went from the swap.
Yes.
So she
got like the Julia Sokolowski.
Yes.
Where it's like, okay, she was, you know, did she drew the whatever odd numbered.
She missed a vote, but it wasn't like she got taken out of a tribe that was going
right,
to try.
And then you go to the tribe that voted somebody out.
Yes.
Yeah. So they've done it for like a vote here or there. But here it's been that you actually, there's a benefit to going to Ghost Island, and not just that you get the treasure, but maybe the bigger benefit is that you miss the vote.
Yeah, and can I say that there is an underrated value of getting a night alone?
Mm-hmm.
I would have loved so many times to take a night off, to go be by myself, to get rice to cook, to not have to make the fire, and to have the fire already made, just to go explore and chill out. Because you have, particularly if you're an introvert, and I'm an introvert, I mean, I know I'm like big and bubbly and go and like and be social, but I sort of recharge when I'm alone. To have like a night just to not have to deal with other people, That would be such a huge advantage, I think, to a lot of people, even if you do miss the social politics of the vote. But then you also miss the trouble mm-hmm. of trying to mess up a vote.
Yeah, but I do think that it affects everybody differently, where there are going to be some people that they go to Ghost Island or Exile Island and they come back, they have a miserable experience, that just being alone by themselves ends up whether it's like a mental thing where they're sort of like alone with their thoughts, like where Chris was, and then he got very emotional, but he said that then he was able to recenter himself and got stronger to go back to the game. You do seem like you get to eat as much as you want when you go to Ghost Island, but I think that there are probably going to be people where it ends up being something that recharges the batteries, and then you have people like Josh Wiggler who go to Ghost Island and they could lose their mind.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, so it could go either way, going to Ghost Island.
That's true. Yeah, you know, thank God we got Josh back from Ghost Island.
Yes, thank God. We got.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Tony, for that. We appreciate it. So going to the actual vote then. Okay, so that's right. So we are talking about now Chris is out of the picture. And then you had the four Malolo and the four Naviti headed towards potentially a rock draw. And we saw the three of Dominic and Wendell and Morgan very quickly pull the ripcord on the idea of potentially going to rocks, where ironically, Angela, who was willing to vote against Dominic with Chris being in the picture, she was the one that was like, no, I want to be true to Naviti. We saw in the episode, Wendell said, that really wasn't super interesting to me.
I loved watching this episode. This was a fun episode of Survivor to watch. I don't like this move.
Okay, you don't like it from whose perspective?
Malolo's perspective. I also don't like it from, while we got a singular good episode, I was really sad to see Morgan go. Just like I was really sad to see both Gonzalez and Jacob go.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're losing good people and interesting, exciting storytellers early, which I kind of like to lose lame people early. So I don't like it from that perspective. But
see, I never thought Morgan was a super compelling character.
Oh, really?
I never got it.
People talk about her, she's
going to be like Kim Spradlin. And I said, well, I don't see it. I think she has a side ponytail like Kim Spradlin, but I'm not getting. Don't throw around Kim Spradlin's name.
Well, I would agree with you on that. I don't know that I saw Morgan as a Kim Spradlin type player. I more just liked her confessionals and her personality.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's kind of a quirky new character. And I thought, this could be fun from a storytelling perspective. Mm-hmm. My philosophy pre-merge was about creating relationships that would take me further in the game. It wasn't so much about winning votes necessarily, about am I setting myself up well to have relationships which I can maneuver later in the game. And I think that's where this move sort of fails for me, because it's not like any four of the Malolo have a relationship with Angela.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They haven't cultivated that. They were fully willing to leave Angela out of this vote. Angela also doesn't seem like someone anybody wants to play with. And I think that's really important early on in the game, is to create relationships with people you want to play with. And that's why I don't like it from Libby's perspective. I think Libby voted out the exact type of person you want to play with, which is you want to play with someone who is like you, who thinks like you, who you have fun with, who makes your time out there more enjoyable. I think you always gotta save your buddy. And it reminds me, you know, when I learned this lesson was right after I swapped on Millennials versus Gen X, and Chris and I were making the decision to vote out Cece or to vote out Dave. And now Dave is arguably the more, I mean, not arguably, hands down, unequivocally, is the more dangerous player. And we even
more
knew
dangerous
that.
Than Cece.
Well, I mean, yeah, Dave's my buddy. I feel like I got to double down on Dave.
Okay, well, I'll take Cece.
All right, that's fair. You know, but you also have poor choice in fashion, so I don't know how much we can trust you, Rob.
Hey, sorry, I've taken you off of what you were saying. You were making a very compelling point.
Right. So there is Dave, even though he's dangerous, I enjoyed being out there with Dave. I understood how Dave thought, because Dave saw the game through a similar perspective as mine, versus Cece, where I don't know what the hell she does think. Right. She's not thinking about the game in the way that I am. I didn't particularly. I mean, Cece's a very nice one, but it's not like I really loved being out there with her. So I think the right decision was get rid of the free radical, get rid of the person who you don't have a tight relationship with, who you don't know where they stand, and keep the person you like to play with, who you understand how they think. And ultimately, like, my favorite days playing Survivor were the days that I played with Dave. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the time we turned against each other was pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And now I've got like a friend for life in Dave. And I think that there is something to playing with a buddy. And if for no other reason, then it just makes it better to be out there with people you want to be with.
Yeah. Well, look, I agree with what you're saying. I thought that it did seem like Libby did try to save Morgan. I thought she did say like, yeah, but if we could go after, you know,
she pitched Wendell, which I don't think the tribe is going to vote out Wendell if they're having trouble winning challenges. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you don't like vote out Angela.
Well, so just to speak to this a little bit, so that there was a secret scene this week where James is talking about this ultimate decision. And one of the things that he discussed was that there was some distrust between Malolo and Naviti. And he had thought that there was a possibility that maybe because Naviti was saying, hey, you guys should all vote for Angela, that maybe they, if Dominic did have a real idol, that they were being set up to put their votes on Angela and then an idol gets played on Angela.
Maybe, but I think they saw how real that feud was between Dominic and Chris,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got two alpha guys who do not like each other, who are coming after each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think either of those guys seems like they're one to back down.
Mm-hmm.
That right, I think you can count on that feud being real, and that Dominic wants to undermine Chris mm-hmm. by voting Angela. I think that there's a bit of overthinking here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also don't know that I love this perspective, this move from James's perspective. Because like I don't know what James has told other people, but I think everyone knows that he's a Harvard guy, that he works in consulting. He's obviously very well spoken. He's physically fit. He's shown himself to be a bit like, you know, a desire to be upstanding, to be a good guy. And then if you add on the fact that James, you know, knows how to make moves, was very adept. This was super well executed. I don't want to minimize that this was a well done vote. I just don't know that I agree with it. Right. So he executes this move. So he knows how to play and he's willing to play. I don't know how much longer James is going to stay around. Who wants to keep that guy around?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I feel like I understand what it's like to be a James type out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the smart, well-spoken guy who is playing hard gets voted out pretty quickly after he shows his hand.
You know, it's so difficult also with being able to do the kinds of, you know, have the kind of conversation that we're having and sort of like, you know, we're talking about James, like it's, we were not shown how much Laurel was a part of that conversation.
Right. Or Donathan.
I have to imagine that Laurel was, you know, in those talks with James. Donathan seemed like he was completely left out. And it wasn't really until my second viewing last night they said, oh, Donathan is on this tribe also.
Right.
I mean, he was not even shown, you know, what he thought at all about any of this.
Right. Yeah. After such a strong premiere, it was Donathan's really,
we saw Libby and Laurel and James, and that was it. It seemed like that they were not even consulting with Donathan.
Yeah. And you know what? That's not a bad position to be in. I guess that's like later in the game, I could understand this move. I think I could also understand this move if it was made with an attempt to flush the idol.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if it came with an idol flush attempt, great. But now you've shown that the Malolo are four strong. You just made enemies in all of the Naviti. I guess you can imagine that Chris is going to come back and be with the Malolos. So now you've left Dom knowing that he's on the bottom, and now he has an idol that he's definitely going to make a move with.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've given the guy with a loaded gun every reason to cock it and get ready to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's also what makes this move tricky. Because I think if you vote out Angela and Chris comes back, Chris will still vote with the Malolos because he hates Dominic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's true. It's, you know, I'm only speaking from the edit, which is all that we, you know, have. But it feels like this is more a Libby and James led vote than a Laurel and Donathan led vote.
Yeah. Well, I think it might have been a James and Laurel led vote.
Okay.
Because I got the sense that they were together, where if when we go back to the dynamics of Malolo, it seemed like that Libby was part of that other group, the Brendan and Stephanie Johnson and Jenna and the group that got together to vote against Gonzalez. And it seemed like that little group that we saw, you know, Stephanie was talking with James and Laurel and potentially with Jacob about like the group that was like, hey, we're on the bottom here. Should we do something? Like, it seems like that that James and Laurel were from that group.
Yeah.
And weren't necessarily, in my mind, aligned super tight with Libby before the swap.
And that makes sense. And I think that's also another reason why this is a bad move for Libby to get rid of her friend and Morgan.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Yeah, you spent probably 6 days in your original tribe and then you swap. And now you meet all of these new people and you're going to swap again. So you need to protect yourself for the next swap. And after two swaps, if you make it to the merge, say you haven't seen people since the very beginning, I don't know that bond is super tight with your original tribe mates.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that while it is politically correct to say original tribe strong, you know, that doesn't always hold over in the merge. My, you know, original tribe from Game Changers, Nuku, went in with a 9-4 advantage to the merge. And guess how long we stayed Nuku strong?
Mm-hmm.
One vote.
Right.
And that one vote was a battle between us to vote out the one, like to vote out the mana person that wasn't going to serve our interests when we ultimately turned on each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think you can say original tribe strong, but always be thinking about the game as an individual, because only one person wants $1 million. And your best move early in the game is to be making as many flexible relationships as possible. And I think that that's what, you know, if you just voted out Angela, you save the fracture and you create the ability to have goodwill with the people from the Naviti tribe and potentially have more flexible relationships moving forward.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're saying is making a lot of sense, whereas there's not that big of a difference between voting out Angela and voting out Morgan from, you know, in terms of...
Oh, in terms of like future strategy, no. It's just more about the relationships are important in the early game.
And so you had an opportunity to maybe form a cross-tribe coalition between the two groups of, okay, here's, we work together and we voted out Angela at the same time. If you're Malolo, then she was somebody from the other tribe anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then also... Chris, probably you can still pull him back over. So when you go into your next vote, there's still a very strong chance that you could tell Chris, like, oh, we didn't know she was with you. Oh, my God. Oh, you know, like, we just didn't want to go to Rocks. So, but
exactly,
you're also
all you can say. We didn't want to go to Rocks. And God, Dom was being so domineering He was bullying us into the vote. Chris, please come be our leader and save us.
Right. Save us. And then also, hypothetically, let's say things, you know, you go back to tribal council next time and then Dominic plays his idol, plays it on the right person. Who do you think Dominic is voting for?
Chris is going home.
Right. So, yeah, no, I think that maybe, you know, while it was an exciting vote, I think that maybe the better move might have been. Now, again, they flush the legacy advantage, but
nobody knew that was
right,
happening.
Nobody knew it was happening, but it ends up going into the hands of Dominic, which is another tool in his toolkit. Now, you played in two seasons, the two seasons with the legacy advantage. So right. I feel like that you are somebody who can speak to this. You know, when I came on the Know-It-Alls last night and I said, like, oh, Libby, how stupid. Did she learn nothing from Officer Sarah? Why did she piss off Morgan right before? And then I very quickly realized after I had already said it, like, no, well, obviously she didn't know that she had the legacy advantage.
Right.
So where Sarah obviously did. But do you feel like that in this era, do you need to treat other people like they have some type of advantage?
Oh, gosh. I mean, probably.
Or is that too much to ask?
Well, I think now that there are so many variables thrown into the game, it's really impossible to hold all of those things in tension at the same time. Like, I remember in Millennials Gen X, we were all looking for people seeing if people were doing funny things during challenges, like they might be finding idols at challenges, because we went and played right after we saw Second Chances. And then when Game Changers started, there was just there's too much stuff that I never even thought to look for people grabbing idols at challenges. And then Troy Zane grabbed one right in front of us all.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean... Yes, you can like that. That's not a bad strategy to treat everyone like they might have an advantage. But can you keep that intention with the other 9 million things you would need to keep
too much going on?
Plus, like, prepare for the wild thing, like the wild new twist that you've never even seen before that you have to be potentially calculating for.
Yeah. Lots of things happening. So that's tough.
Yes. Well, yeah, especially if you I don't know. I've read a lot about the science of decision fatigue in the wake of being on Survivor.
Yes. Talk to me about this. What is this?
Yeah. So it's also called ego depletion.
Yes.
And basically, your brain functions the same way as any muscle in your body. It needs a certain amount of energy to do calculations. And the more calculations, the more thoughts you have, the more glucose is depleted.
Mm-hmm.
So that means if you're not taking in a lot of calories, you're going to deplete your mind's ability to make calculations and to think through things. And I found this towards the end of both of my seasons, that I would get to a point where my brain literally would not compute like it used to compute, because I had been overthinking everything, which is my natural inclination. Yeah. So to some extent, I actually think it's better to think less, right? To not burden yourself with all of these potential variables because you don't know, and stick to a couple of key truisms about Survivor. One of which I got from my Survivor tutor, Alex Forstenhausler, is there are two. I've got to shout him out on every podcast.
Yes.
There are two types of allies: the people who are my allies and the people who will be my allies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of the game board like that, I think it covers all of those bases.
Yeah, just to go back to decision fatigue, because this is something that I have, you know, read a lot about in terms of, and not so much for Survivor, but just for practical use in real life, where the more decisions you have to make in your daily life, it eats up at some, like, you wake up in the morning and you have a certain amount of willpower for the day.
Yes.
And every time you are forced to make a decision, should I do this? Should I eat this? Should I eat this? Should I eat this? You know, not everything's eating. Should I work out? Should I not work out? Should I do this? Should I check my email? Should I check Twitter? And every time, by the end of the day, you know, if you use up all of your willpower for the day, you're sort of left with nothing. And that's why by the end of the night,
that's why you eat chocolate cake at midnight.
Yeah, right.
Have no more willpower.
I'm eating
left.
Junk food and biting my fingernails and on Twitter and won't go to bed. You know. But the more you could sort of simplify, like, okay, every day for breakfast I eat this, or I get up and I have no, I don't have a choice to whether I'm going to exercise or whether I'm going to sleep. It's just this is what I'm doing at this time. And if you make those decisions ahead of time and sort of just take the choice out of it, then you can end up with more willpower. But I never thought about it in terms of Survivor as well.
Yeah, I think I think it's very real out there on Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And that.
So, but in terms of like, I feel like that you're saying two different things, because when you're saying that, okay, well, I have the allies and the people that I think are going to be my allies, it's almost like if you looked at the Survivor game board as more of like a binary thing of like, okay, these are my friends, these are not my friends, and I'm not going to associate with the people that are my friends. I feel like that then you would have less decisions in terms of every opportunity. Should I talk to this person? Should I not talk to this person? Should I go over there? Should I try to win that person over? Like, I feel like that you are complicating the things by putting everybody in play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, you know, I always had everybody in play and, you know, it never really worked out for me.
I would say keep everybody in play, but I feel like that.
Yeah, I think you have to do it more. I remember I had a conversation. I was getting ready to go back on Game Changers and I was having a conversation with Dave to try to suss out what I should do differently.
Dave Johnson?
Dave Johnson?
Yeah.
No, David Wright.
Oh, David Wright. Okay.
Yes. Who's Dave Johnson?
Sorry, I was being stupid again, and I've taken you off of.
No, it's fine. I just I'm upset. I didn't catch the reference. I couldn't play along. I was talking to Dave Wright, and he said, you know, something that I should work on was that it's better in the game to have people know where you stand,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's true. It's better to. I would rather eliminate people who are free radicals where I don't know where exactly they stand. I would rather eliminate that person than an enemy, because at least I know where an enemy stands. And I think that I was always trying to go talk to people and it did get me in trouble. It painted targets on my back. I think that you can always have, even if you aren't trying to actively cultivate people, you can still have a friendly relationship with them. So that, say, after you go blindside them at tribal, when you get back that night, if you're the first person to go talk to that person you just blindsided, you can typically pull them in as an ally, even if you haven't, you know, been finessing them the entire time. I just think there's a difference between not burning bridges, right? I don't think you want to make enemies of people and then versus trying to always like, you know, have them on the leash.
Yeah. We were talking about this last night in terms of Kellen, and when she had the conversation, Kellen. She's very good. And she was talking with, I think it was Stephanie and Jenna, and she said to them, you know, it's too bad. You know, you guys are just in the downside of the numbers. Do you think that that is the right way to handle that type of situation?
I don't think so. I think you want to, I think there needs to be, we always had, typically there was always a B story after a swap. If there was a group of people I was sticking with, we had a story that we told the people who were on the downside of the numbers to make them feel like they were not on the downside, right? Because you don't want to alert anyone to them being on the bottom, because that's when they go look for idols.
Oh, so you feel like those two things were connected?
Yeah, I feel like what you want to do is minimize the concern. I remember when we swapped with Troyzan. So it was the first swap on Game Changers, and I was with like four people from my original tribe and Troyzan, and we just went and told Troyzan, which actually wasn't, it was true at the time, that like he didn't need to be worried that we would vote out Suri if we went to tribal council. And to help, you know, I mean, help sway him and potentially bring him in. And I think that ultimately helped Sarah, you know, have an in with Troyzan when she was able to, you know, reconnect them in the merge. Yeah, same with when we swap.
It's not a lie until you have to go to tribal council.
Oh, that's right. But yeah, I think giving people a story just to lower their stress level, because also there's also the potential that relationship could turn into something.
Mm-hmm.
Say you don't have to go to tribal council for a long time. Say you swap with those people. If you have preformed bonds, you know, I think it's something you could do with that, right? Never let people know they're going home. Never let people know they're in trouble.
So you are a firm believer in never let them see the knife.
Right. Yeah. Keep it hidden.
Keep it hidden. Okay. So I have a question for you, Zeke. This is from Brian Lehman, who wants to know, what's your take on the complainer edits for the Navitis who swapped to the Malolo beach? Is it normal to grouse about a new camp, or should they have kept it to themselves and saved it for confessional?
Oh, well, I take issue with Bradley's beef with that beach. I'm very fond of that beach. The island is called Vanua. I spent 40 days of my 62 days on Survivor.
Vanua.
Yes. On Survivor on that beach. And, you know, it's a beautiful beach. I have to say, those sunrises that they showed are some of the most miraculous sunrises I've ever seen. Every morning I would wake up, I would walk down the beach, I would get naked, I would dig a hole, I would scrunch down, and I would take the best poops of my life watching those sunrises. So I think you're not getting the full potential of that beach if you're complaining about it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on all
the island has magical powers, is what you're saying?
I think it does have magical powers.
Yes.
It does. Okay. It's a beautiful island. I'll grant you it's not cool as cool as Manariki, which is where the Navidi tribe started. But, you know, it's Survivor. You're in Fiji. You're in paradise. Like, have a good attitude about it. I always tried to see the positive in everything, because so much of Survivor sucks. If you're dwelling in the negative, I think that's really, it's not going to do much for your morale. So always be excited to be there.
Yeah, I don't recall too much of people other than in like a Survivor Fiji, where you literally had like one super nice camp and one not nice camp, too much complaining about like, oh, I wish we were at the other tribe because everything is so much nicer there.
Right.
But like not even like the shelter, like down to the beach isn't as nice here.
Yeah, yeah, it's like your 4-star resort isn't up to your standards.
It's like the other one is still a Survivor beach.
Yeah, and it's a cool little beach. It has these very cool washed up like little labyrinthine, you know, white pieces of wood, and it has a lot more like shallow sandy areas to go be in the water. The mm-hmm. other beach has a lot more rocks in the water that are always hitting you when the waves crash. I don't know that I do, because we didn't get a ton from Bradley in the premiere. I think it's not great that Bradley's edit thus far is him complaining about the beach.
Yeah. Who was the biggest complainer that you played with? Was there anybody?
Oh, God. Everybody on the Game Changers cast.
Yes. So the people that were the returning players came back. I think you're right about that. I think that the first time players come in and they're like, oh my God, can you believe it? We're here. We're on Survivor. Isn't this crazy? You know, if everybody,
like, could, I'm in my TV.
Yeah. If everybody at home could see me. And then people come back and it's like, what, this again?
Yeah. Which always bugged me. I was like, come on, this is still great. Be excited.
You haven't even watched one of your seasons yet.
Right. I mean, yes, I played sort of one extended version, the Magnum version, right, as we say. I'd seen everything. All those challenges were rehashed challenges. All the beach rehashed beaches. Mm-hmm. I still love seeing them.
Yeah.
It was great. You're on Survivor. What more could you want? What is better than playing Survivor?
Yeah. I mean, some things, but
not many things.
Not many things. So it has its ups and downs. It has ups and downs.
Sure. I just think of the entire experience, you know. Being out there is the best part.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you come home that everything kind of gets crummy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, too, we love to watch players be in awe of the experience, because that's what the show asks us to do. It asks us to take the journey with the players. And I think we want to see that wide-eyed enthusiasm, because we want to believe that going and playing is as good as we would imagine it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I think that's the cool part, especially now, about Survivor, is that being like a fan is such a valued thing. The show casts its fans. The show is leaning on its fans to be creative and to evolve the game. Like the production learns from the super fans who go and play. And I think it invites us even more to be a part of this experience and go on the ride with the survivors.
Yeah. So in terms of complaint, and there are ways you can complain on Survivor, I think, be artful about it. And maybe Bradley was being hilarious in his confessional talking about the sand and what he doesn't like about it. But for whatever reason, we didn't see that. We just saw the...
Well, look, I think it's tough for Bradley, too, because everybody complains, right? Everybody complains and whines all the time, and you're hungry and there's sand in your butt and whatever. It's a tough break. That's the part that you don't have in your hands is what mm-hmm. they show. And Lord knows I said so many things. I am so glad they did not show.
But I want to go back to something that we compared to the Game Changer season from Donathan from last week.
Yes.
And so he had that moment, and so many of us compared it to that moment where Suri ended up getting the chance to go across the balance beam.
Right. Even elements of that slide was the same slide from that challenge. It was in the same location
mm-hmm.
as that challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, first, I want to say I love Donathan so much. Mm-hmm. And I didn't pay a ton of attention to the pregame stuff, but I did look at his social media, and it looks like that he had his own sort of mini press tour in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Which was so cool because, you know, Donathan is this, you know, great out gay young kid who grew up in a really hard place. Like, I grew up in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is nowhere near as remote of whatever, you know, part of Kentucky he's from. And in, you know, Kentucky is the same state where Kim Davis, the registrar who refused to marry gay couples after the Supreme Court mm-hmm. decision, that's the same state that sort of rallied around her. And to see Donathan's little community rallying around him just warms my heart. And he mm-hmm. seems like a great guy, and he's going to have a great ride on the show. And I'm so excited for him.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, I know I had so many of these moments out there where you think, I can't do it. I remember it was a reward challenge in episode 3, I think, where it was tied 4-4. And the challenge was we had to go swim out in the water and grab a ring. And it's the one where Michaela was like such a badass, and all the girls won all of their part. And like Michaela lost her blouse, and it was awesome. And all the boys were just getting crushed. Mm-hmm. And it was boys were last, and it was me and Jay versus Chris and Dave. And I thought, well, we're screwed, but like, you can't just give up and throw in the towel. You got to go and fight. And Jay pulled me in and gave me this big pep talk. And he's like, okay, so we got to have someone go swim, grab the ring, and then someone's got to take care of Chris. And I thought, great, great. And then Jay's like, so I'm faster swimmer, so I'll go swim. And I thought, great, perfect idea. And then I look around and remember thinking, oh, so I got to go wrestle Chris. I can't wrestle Chris. Chris is a million pounds. He's huge. He's a former Sooner football player. How dare I attempt to go wrestle Chris? But then, you go out there.
It's
and
like
you
an
make
Undertaker.
Right. You go out there, and I didn't stop him, but I made a pretty good attempt. Mm-hmm. I did much better in stopping Chris. We almost won. If it wasn't for this, wave, which sort of took us away from our pole, we would have won. But I remember
Do you feel like he took his foot off the gas with you? Because he could probably, murder you if he wanted to.
I think I just had a good strategy with Chris. And I think, he didn't give me enough credit. And that's what tangled him up. But I remember thinking, I did so much better than I thought I was going to. Maybe there is so much more in me. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should stop telling myself I can't do things. And it really had a profound effect on me. And I think you saw that with Donovan. He said, I can't do it. Then he had to go. He was forced to go do it. He proved himself wrong. And I loved it. Mm-hmm. I love that moment.
You know, it's interesting on Survivor that there's like almost two different versions of the coming of age story, where there's the, what am I doing out here? And then sometimes the player will have the story of, look what I was able to do, and it happens in the form of starting a fire or participating in a challenge. And then there's also the version of it where it comes in the form of pulling off a vote, where like pulling off a strategic move, and that sort of like the survivor who seemed like they were in over their head ends up coming of age in that way. So we've seen, and sometimes one can sort of lead to the other. So do you think now that Donathan had that moment, he went to Ghost Island, do you feel like that the strategic part of the game will come into focus for him eventually? Or do you feel like that, okay, he will have a story that will be about him coming out to Survivor and sort of becoming somebody who, has a confidence, but not necessarily ever get the game part of it down?
I think we will see Donathan come of age in the game. Because he's in a great position to make something happen down the line.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, everyone sort of thinks of like Donathan as this like, aw, sweet shucks little mm-hmm. kid. I don't think anyone thinks of him as being that smart. And that's everything that you want people to think of you. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want people to think you're smart. You do sort of want to be sitting out the early part of the game. Both of the winners that I played with, they didn't do anything until very, very late in the game, aside from continue to always have good relationships and have a stake in the game. So I think that Donathan will be in a position to make a move. He'll be a swing vote somewhere down the line. And I think we will. I think this story will pay off strategically.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that's ultimately where it goes, because if he does get to the end by everybody sort of underestimating him, I feel like that is a tough sell to the jury of that you like if you just felt like, OK, well, nobody was ever worried about him. People did not perceive that he was that bright. And then he gets to the end. If that's how they felt the whole way, are they going to be OK with losing to that person?
I agree with I understand what you're saying. I agree with you. I the way I typically say this is that when you get to the merge, people make this calculation about everyone who makes the merge. And it's, are they like a zero? There's like, I think as Nicole would say, are they a zero or a one? Can they win?
Bring back that zero or one thing when we go talk to Nicole about the hat.
Okay, I will. Okay, great. They're like a zero or one. Either there's no chance that they can win, or there is an argument that they can win. And I think people who get tagged with the zero, they never shake the zero. They're always believed to be a person that everyone beats. So they sort of, it seems that they have an easier ride in the game because everyone is always willing to take them further. But I think, you know, will Donathan have that zero, or because he's seen someone with a story, with potential, will he get a chance to have a one at the merge? And I think that will be the biggest, the biggest tell about whether or not people are willing to give him the money. I also think it depends how much people hate the other two people next to him.
All right, I want to start bringing in more questions from the listeners. But first, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Get this, Zeke, that today's podcast support for today's show comes from Microsoft Teams. Microsoft Teams is your hub for teamwork in Office 365. Of course, we know on Survivor, teamwork, very important.
Crucial. Can't do it without a strong team.
Yes, and Microsoft Teams helps you and your team create, collaborate, and communicate authentically as you would in the real world. I know just from running a podcast network that you want to be as in communication as you can be with everybody on your team. With so much to look after, wouldn't it be great if there was just one place to look? Forget all these other sites and emails. You could look at everything all on Microsoft Teams. Teams is that single workspace where you can work, share, and connect with all the people in your work life. Teams brings together chats, meetings, files, and apps all in one place. Take teamwork where you work with apps for mobile and desktop. You know, some people would say that my work team, some of them are in the kitchen and some of them are in the living room.
But with Microsoft Teams,
we can have them all in one place.
Go team.
So whether you're sprinting towards a deadline or sharing your next big idea, Teams can help you and your team achieve even more. Microsoft Teams is available in Office 365. Visit office.com/teams to learn more. That's office.com/teams. Zeke, we got emails in here for you.
Oh, excellent.
Again, and you know what? If they could make it where I could just look in all in one place for all of the feedback for this show, that would be great also. That would be fantastic.
Yes, okay. Centralize the feedback.
Centralize the feedback. Okay, because I got emails, I got Facebook comments, tweets.
You got so many pages in front of you.
You name it. So this is a question for you. This is from Marcus.
Hi, Marcus.
Marcus asks, do you think that the situation for Wendell and Dominic is similar to the position that you and Adam were in after the first vote on the Millennial Tribe? Even if you did not go to a tribal in the constellation of tribes, how did you come over that blind side and work your way back to the group? Again, is there any lesson for Wendell and Dominic that they can take from you guys in the quest to be a part of the majority again? So let's go back to that point where you guys went to your first tribal council.
That's right.
And then ultimately Mari got blindsided. And then we in the podcasting world said, oh, well, Adam and Zeke, that pair, they're doomed. But as you guys came off the show, you guys said, well, we weren't really, you know, a tight two at that point in time.
Yeah, no, Adam and I never really clicked. There was always a bit of, I think, competitiveness.
Click. Nice.
Exactly like that. And I think recovering from that blind side, I think neither of us really recovered from that blind side as far as our position in the tribe. If we went to tribal council, thankfully there were the two immunity challenges after the blind side ended in puzzles. So I was safe. But if we lost either of those, then I was pretty confident I was going home. And the only move I felt like I had to make, because I tried everywhere to find like an entry point and no one was interested in working with me. So the best thing I could do was go after Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately what I did, is I started laying the groundwork to have the vote be Adam and not me.
So do you think, is that the right move for Dominic and Wendell come into this next cycle?
Well, the difference is that, so does Wendell know that the idol is real?
You know, I asked Morgan about this. She said that she had heard a little bit about Dominic's idol, but she didn't know for real that it was real. And then, so I would think that the same could be true for Wendell. Now, the interesting scenario in my mind is that with the fake idol and the real idol, could Dominic play a little bit of like switcheroo with Wendell and himself going into, if they are a tight two going into that tribal council? I think you could have a moment where, okay, we are both wearing this idol, and now where are you going to put your votes?
That's a very good move. That's a very good trick. I would love to see it. That would be a ton of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they should do that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they should do it, but then ultimately, what will they do with their votes? And is that going to be enough? Will Dominic put the real idol?
Yeah, I think too. You know, I think the question is, what, you know, do Chris and Angela team up again, and do they end up going with them? Like, well, I think there are so many other variables too. Mm-hmm. But I think that, like, rolling up with dual idols, saying where do you put your votes? That's not a bad strategy. Then you have to, like, because then it would be, let's say Chris and Angela go with the Malolo. So then it's 6-2. They split the votes 3-3.
I see now. That's why you're so smart.
Right. And then Dominic plays the idol for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wendell goes home. So that's not a good position for Wendell.
Could they say we have two idols?
They could say they have two idols. That's not likely.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like, because neither of them has been to Ghost Island.
But they, could they say,
and why there's never been two idols taken at beach at a time?
Yeah, and could they say that I found this idol back at Naviti, and now,
you know what they could do?
Yeah,
is they could say, Dominic could say, I have the legacy advantage, mm-hmm. and an idol, and the just when you know it, I can play the legacy advantage, which is effectively a hidden immunity idol at this tribal.
Yeah, well, the legacy advantage is pretty worthless, right? When you say, like, it worked out for Officer Sarah because she got to use it at a certain time. But generally, legacy advantage is pretty much,
well,
like,
it's just a hidden immunity idol that activates at one or potentially two tribal councils, right?
And it's really like it only works at, you know, on a certain night of the year, you know,
right?
It's not that useful.
I've never been crazy. I've never loved the legacy.
Like, we're gonna keep trying until we make it work.
Yeah, but you know,
I like
that's how we got the hidden immunity idol to where it is now. We had to like play with it a few seasons and to figure out how to best work with
it. Okay, well, let's workshop this for a second here.
All right,
what I like is I like when they hand it off. I like when I got pumped up last night when Morgan got voted out. I said, ho, legacy advantage. Who's she gonna give it to?
But I think that's supposed
like that
to be
part.
The fun of the legacy
that's
advantage
the good part.
Is to see it get turned over. And then when it actually gets used, you know, whatever. But I think it's supposed to be this fun little game that keeps tailing along the way. The problem was, in the first two iterations of the legacy advantage, the person holding it held it for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you only saw it got it, you know, willed once. But say that, you know, Dominic gets, you know, so let's say whatever shenanigans they try to pull next week doesn't work and Dominic gets voted out and then he gets willed to, you know, Wendell.
You should start writing in smaller letters on that legacy advantage.
I don't know, right?
Then I shouldn't have put Jacob's name on there. I'll tell you that right now.
I know. I thought it was weird that was he really a holder of the legacy
Not
advantage?
Not really.
You just get to will it. You didn't really ever have it.
He delivered
it. Yeah. I guess we can, you know, poor Jacob. I'll give Jacob his name on the legacy advantage.
Okay. He can have that.
Right.
Fine.
I don't begrudge him.
So and I talked a lot about during Millennials versus Gen X, I felt like that the legacy advantage was bad because nobody knew it was even in the game. Like, it was a new twist. Nobody even knew it existed. And then it's like, okay, Jess gave it to Ken. And then once Ken had it, then nobody even knew it was a thing to be targeting him or who. Hey, who? So one of us here has the legacy advantage. Nobody even knew it existed.
Right.
So that to me, part of the fun is like, oh, okay, let's vote out that person because I think they have the legacy advantage. And then who will they will it to? Like, with like the one time it was really cool was when Sarah voted out the fan favorite Tier Don Thomas to get it. That was the one time that it
was because there needed to be knowledge of it. And unfortunately, of all the things in the game, the legacy advantage is the one thing that nobody has told anybody else about. Right. Yes. So it would be more fun if Morgan
Jacob told Stephanie that he gave it to Morgan. But now Morgan is voted out of the game. And now nobody knows that Dominic has. Now, the only thing, the saving grace here.
Wait, Jacob told Stephanie that.
Yes. In the premiere.
OK.
Stephanie knew that Morgan had the legacy advantage.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
But now Morgan is gone. So now it's going to be a mystery of.
And Stephanie's on the other side.
Yeah, so Stephanie could say, well, who was Morgan close to? One of those people has the legacy. This is a little bit of a whodunit element, which I like.
Yes.
But the one saving grace for me is that it's in the hands of Dominic. And as we know, that Dominic is such a wild card. Anything could happen with that. And that brings us to this question. This is from Ileana writes in to say, if Dominic doesn't show the Malolo people his fake idol, would James think of him as a Russell Hance 2.0 and decide to vote out Morgan? Did the things that Chris was saying to the Malolos about Dominic have an effect on their opinion of him? So do you think this is interesting? Did Chris poison the well on Dominic? And then when Dominic went ahead and showed people his fake idol, that there was already a seed of doubt, a Russell 2.0 seed of doubt in their minds. And then they're like, all right, you know what? That's it. We can't trust this guy.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, because what you did is you had Chris's information verified. I remember when we swapped the millennials versus Gen X, I kept telling Chris and Dave, I was like, I'm on the bottom of the millennial tribe. They hated me. I'm ready to switch. I need new allies. I don't have anything. And then we went to we came back from tribal. We went to the challenge. And then Figgy said, oh, I'm so glad to see Michelle. I love Michelle. And then it was like, beat, beat, beat. Oh, and Zeke too.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did is it verified my information and it made me trustworthy. I think it verified Chris's information and made him trustworthy.
Yeah.
Because I think that, look, I love how excited all of these players are to play. And I would never be anyone, I would never be someone to say, tone it down. But I think tone it down a bit, guys. We've got like two iterations of we've got all the stuff with the show and the
which
fake
guys?
Idol.
Which guys? Dominic?
Dominic, okay. Yeah. With the fake idol, I think you don't need to be showing all the fake idols. It doesn't do anything but make you seem scheming and dangerous. And it's fine to seem scheming and dangerous later in the game, but right now, just be like the fun-loving guy,
mm-hmm.
right? Who's building the shelter.
Day seven.
Yeah, yeah, we've got a long way to go, gang.
Right. James described Dominic as Russell Hance 2.0. Or should we be past Russell Hance 2.0? I don't. What number of Russell Hance should we be at right now?
I think we should just be over Russell Hance. And because for me, the better version of Russell Hance was Tony. And Tony was such an improvement on Russell
Hance. Tony was Russell 2.0.
Right. Well, it played the aggressive game with lots of advantages, but had enough of a social game to win at the end. Right?
Yes.
That's the evolution. And so
should
I think
Russell be Tony -1?
Yeah, I think that's a better. That's how
I'm not Tony -1.
I'm the greatest of all time.
Yes.
Yeah, and I much more see Dominic, who actually works in construction, right? Which was Tony's fake job. Mm-hmm. As he's a kind of like a big East Coast gruff guy who wants his bag of tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should definitely be looking at him as a Tony. I don't know where we factor Joe Mena in that calculation, but definitely an evolution of Tony or along that same lineage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So with the legacy advantage, do you think there's something that Dominic could do with now having an idol, a fake idol, a legacy advantage? Do you think that could he parlay the legacy advantage to something? Could he trade the legacy advantage? Could he say like, hey, James or Laurel, look, like, come over to my side. I'll give you or is it only transferable? Because, some of these
legacy,
are not transferable.
I was at that tribal council where all that legalese was sorted out.
Yes.
I don't think you can. I think the only way the legacy advantage can be transferred is via being voted out.
Mm-hmm.
What was the question? How using
can
the legacy advantage?
Can he do something with the legacy advantage?
Yeah, because I think, too, if Dominic and Wendell are a two and Chris and Angela are a two, you know, I think Dominic and Wendell can say, you four are in charge. Let us be your two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like don't stick with Chris and Angela, because Chris is a hothead. You know, he's never going to work with you. He's always going to be telling you what to do. I don't think anyone can trust Angela, right? She got left out of the vote last night, but we're willing to work with you. We are desperate.
Trust Angela because she got left out of the vote.
Well, I think that's an indication that nobody trusts Angela, right? Because I know, so I've been the person who was the one person left out of a vote before. It was because nobody felt that they could trust me, right? Nobody was even invested enough to trying to work with me in the future that they wanted to include me on mm-hmm. that vote. I think it speaks pretty like lowly of your position on the tribe. So I don't think anyone has any sort of great connection with Angela. And Dominic and Wendell can say, stick with us. You know, we're desperate. We've got nobody. But we think we're better to work with than these guys. And we've also got a bag of tricks. So don't mess with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we've got all the tricks. They don't have any tricks. If you come mess with us, we're going to be playing stuff and it's probably going to backfire at you.
Yeah. This is a question from Lewis, who says, okay, about the legacy advantage. Wouldn't it be the best strategy for the person who has the legacy advantage to tell everybody they have it? And if they're voted out, they will randomly will it to somebody. Wouldn't that make people want to keep you? At least they know who will be using it the final six rather than not knowing who has it.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's best to keep yourself. I don't think that's going to work.
I don't think that's
because I also don't think the legacy advantage holds enough weight.
No pumpkin, no.
Because also I think you're going to put yourself in a Sarah and Sierra Don Thomas situation where an ally is going to vote you out because they think that you're going to will it to them, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to will it randomly. You're going to will it to your friend.
Yeah. Boy, could you tell people like they'll give it to their enemy?
But people aren't going to believe that.
Yeah, maybe you give it to like if you don't like somebody, say like, look, just so you know,
you, me, Steven, and Josh are playing Survivor together. And I'm like, well, you know what? You know, Josh, you're not going to. I have the legacy advantage. And Josh, if you vote me out, I'm going to will it to Rob. Well, why doesn't Josh just go and vote out Rob and then vote out me?
Wait, I'm Josh's enemy. Why? Because of the hat?
Yes, because of the hat.
I mean,
get on board.
OK. Let's see what Steven has to say about the hat.
Great.
Yeah.
I don't know Steven's stance on the hat.
I can predict it. Okay. How about from a different Dominic? Dominic M. Zeke, what is your ghost? The one item from your time on Survivor. It doesn't have to be an idol or an advantage that you would hate to see show up to haunt you.
Oh, gosh. Thing doesn't really have like my ghost doesn't really have an item that could represent it. Maybe like Chris's cowboy boots.
Yes.
I have a better one. Maybe it's my my buff from Survivor Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Because that's really the game that then messed with
boy, with that game would changers. Be like a really confusing note of like in 2014, Zeke Smith went to go play in a Survivor ORG game hosted by a long note.
Yeah,
it's a
long note. And then
they cut back to the flashbacks. And sometimes it says like footage not found for this. So that's a very deep cut joke.
Yep.
That's a very deep cut joke. OK, let's see. Okay, Mike Burke has a question. Follow along here with this one. It's a little out there.
Okay.
Mike says, should Dominic double down on his fake idol theme by creating the fake legacy advantage and wrapping it in the real note he receives and putting it in Chris's bag? Or could he do this to someone on the other tribe to give them a false sense of safety in upcoming votes? Would love to hear your thoughts.
I actually like this idea. I like this idea a whole lot.
It's funny, but what does it buy you?
Chris
is walking around. Okay, I've got the legacy advantage.
I think it's fun, right? Because what also, too...
It's fun for us.
It's fun for us. But too, if you're thinking about how to play Chris, obviously, he's got this massive ego, And I think that, you know, he wants to be the leader, and he's going to be a sort of like a dictatorial type leader.
Mm-hmm.
And the more, I think, false confidence you can give Chris that he thinks that he's invulnerable, I think the nastier he will be to people, and the more of a chance Dominic and Wendell will have of saying, we should be the two that you four pick to stick with.
To be fair, and I've been, you know, hard on Chris and mocking him, but in terms of what we've seen on the actual show, has he been that bad?
I don't know that he did
not get a great edit in First One Out, or you could say he got a fantastic edit in First One Out, because he was one of the breakout stars of First One Out in the Survivor preseason. But in terms of what he's done on the show,
well, I'm not saying that he's been like mean or said hostile things to people. I think the way you saw him speaking down to Angela, that she described it as like getting barked orders at, like she would in the military.
Mm-hmm.
That's not great. That his closest ally is describing him as like a mean drill sergeant. I think he spoke, you know, was kind of wagging his finger in the face of the Malolos, which I don't know that endeared him to them. I think it's more reading personality types.
Yeah.
And I think we can suss out enough of his personality type that he's not going to be a guy who's going to be good riding in the back seat or playing chill or even playing on the same plane as you. He always wants to be the alpha dog.
Okay. Lawson has a question. What flavor of Laffy Taffy do you consider yourself? What is with Seabass's obsession with candy? Of course, Seabass, who's been very fun this season, he had this to say.
Right now, I'm a Taffy, smiley, giggly piece of Laffy Taffy, I guess. Banana flavored.
Happy, smiley, giggly piece of Laffy Taffy, banana flavored.
I loved it. I love Sebastian, and I think I love him because he is wearing the short sleeve goofy print shirt, mm-hmm. the Hawaiian print shirt, having a lot of fun with him. I would say I would be the green apple.
Green apple.
Because I'm sweet, but I got a little bite to me.
Whoa. Whoa.
Yeah.
You know, Zeke, I have something for you.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Oh, I'm okay. So excited.
I have something for you. You know, I don't want to be outdone. I know that one of my co-hosts has outfitted you with a hat, but I think that I have something that, you know, might be a little more impressive.
I don't know that anything could be more impressive than a Wiggler's Wombat's baseball cap.
Okay, let me see that. I got something over here for you.
You got to find it? You've been hiding it?
Yes, I want to hide it out of the eyesight, but I have for you here.
Oh, holy moly.
I took this from my kids' Halloween stash of candy, Zeke.
This for you listeners, is a bona fide, legitimate banana Laffy Taffy.
Yes, Seabass is going to be so jealous. You're going to eat it.
Oh, hell yeah, I'm going to eat it.
Was
I not supposed to eat it?
Well, you can eat it. I don't know how Taffy is going to go.
Yeah, because
podcast.
I think that this is going to be great. Everyone's going to love to hear me smack Taffy into the microphone for the next 15
minutes. Well, now why are you going to punish the audience? What did they do?
They tweeted mean things at me.
Not these people. Not the people that listen to this podcast for an hour and a half. These are your fans.
These are the fans. All right. Well, then I'll save you.
The haters didn't listen.
You want to share this banana with me?
You know, I don't think I like taffy. Believe it or not.
It's okay. It's been a while since I've had it. And it's sort of like faster degrading bubblegum.
Yeah.
It's not the consistency and the taste.
I'm not even sure I've ever had Laffy Taffy, let alone
banana
flavor.
How have you not had Laffy Taffy?
I'm not that fun.
Nah, I guess that's true.
I don't know.
I'll buy it. No fun size candies for you.
No fun. No, what? Chocolate. Chocolate. Sure. But I mean, I feel like Seabass.
Like a Heath bar?
Not a Heath bar, but like a Snickers bar or Reese's Peanut Butter Cup or something like Kit Kat, you know, something with chocolate. And I mean, this guy wants gummy bears, Laffy Taffy.
I love gummy bears.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with Tyson. I'm a big gummy guy.
Okay. Here is a question for you. This is from Phil, who wants to know, what's the best way to tell the opposing tribe that their beach is a real S-hole?
I'm going to double down on my earlier answer and say, you're on Survivor. Love every minute of it. If you're complaining, you're a bitch. Oh,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes. Okay. On that note, John Tinkham wants to know, as someone who played both of their seasons in Fiji, do you think that Survivor should continue filming there for the foreseeable future? Or would you rather see them branch out to different locations like they did in the past. Now, you as somebody who has, you know, you consumed most of the seasons rapidly. How much was the location important to you in terms of where they would take the show?
Not very. I mean, I think it was cool when they were going to places like Tocantins was cool, or Gabon, when there was actually a bit of variation. But then we got to a point where it was just kind of like a Samoa, Philippines, Nicaragua rotation. So we're already seeing the same beaches over and over again. I mean, I suppose part of me would like to see them change location so I could, you know, all of like the traumatic things that happened to me, I get to witness those locations again and again and again every time Survivor plays a new season. So maybe it would be nice to stop watching Survivor and seeing my nightmares like, you know, backdrop flashing up.
You seem like that you have an amazing, as this podcast is evidence of, an amazing memory of, oh, that happened there, that happened there. Is that something that is unique about you? Like if we had another person, like if Michaela was here, would she be able to tell between somebody who was there twice of what season, or is that something that's unique to you?
I have a pretty highly detailed memory of everything. Yes. Like the little beach that they swapped on was not a beach that we ever went to, but I remember, so, you know, sometimes you're in boats and you can't see much of Fiji, but I remember, like, I know that that beach is around the corner from the Millennial Beach, which is the Malolo Beach right now, because I used to see it out of the back of the boat. And I remember staring at it when we were idling in the water for a very long time. I have a very detailed, specific memory. So I also was trying to absorb everything because I never wanted to. I was so excited to be there. I didn't want to forget any of it. So that might be me. But yeah, when I look back, I'm like, I won this challenge there. I lost this challenge there. I won this. This happened. So yes, so selfishly, maybe I could watch Survivor without like being triggered, I suppose. But I think also Fiji is so cheap for the production that it allows them to spend money on cooler stuff. And I would rather have like these awesome drone shots, or like this new challenge. This challenge we had this episode was so cool. I'd rather big epic challenges and cool stuff like Ghost Island, money for that, and have the beaches be the same.
Yeah, doesn't bother me. It's all the same to me.
Give me a good cast and exciting twists, and I'm in.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of cool for these Survivor players to come in and sort of be like, oh, wait, this is the beach where blah, blah, blah.
Well, because now it's like playing in Yankee Stadium.
Right. Right. Right.
Like you've dreamed of being there. You've seen
City Field.
City Field. Yes. Not Shea Stadium anymore. That's done.
Gone.
You know, you've seen the arena in which Survivor has played, and now you actually get to be in those same spots.
Yeah, like I think that's something cool about the Big Brother house, where it's like, oh, this is the same house where, like, even though they changed houses, but it's like, Dan Giesling was here at one point.
Yeah, you know. Like I'm in the storage
Meta World
room.
Peace was here.
I'm in that side of the shower where, you know, Spencer Clawson did his thing.
Yeah, yes. So there's something cool. It's like, oh, I'm right here where Zeke would get naked and dig a hole and poop every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that you too can poop in my spot on Fiji.
There you go. Okay, then a lot of people wanted to know about your fire making lessons with Josh Wiggler.
Yes.
Okay, this is a question from the great Nick Wilson, who wants to know, how do you learn to make fire before you go to the island when you live in New York City? Was this something that you learned back in Oklahoma?
No, this is something I learned how to make fire with flint when I first started watching Survivor, and I was at my mom's house in the woods in Connecticut. So that wasn't that hard to go out and use the flint. I'll learn how to use the flint. Mm-hmm. But no, when I did it, so I guess the thing I had to learn in New York City was the bamboo fire making.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to have like this little stretch of outdoor space. So I did. I had this big bundle of bamboo and a machete, and I was always out there, like, you know, doing the bamboo fire saw.
Mm-hmm.
It was very tricky. I probably could have lost my lease over it because I started a lot of fires out there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you have to.
They don't want you making fires on the balcony of your New York Brooklyn apartments.
Apparently, I don't think so. I think that'd be frowned upon. Though I made it. The one I got Josh to make and several others have been made actually inside my apartment.
Yes,
I'm sure they prefer the balcony than inside. Yeah, it was tough. It was very windy that day, which made it difficult for both podcasting, recording outside, and making fire outside, because you need to keep all of your little magnesium flakes, you know, bunched together, and we would scrape them and they would fly everywhere. You know, Josh was a good student and he was able to replicate his results, but it's always another animal when you're doing it on the island.
Yeah, always tricky. Carrie Gravelin wants to know, will the fire making lessons continue with Josh Wiggler?
That's up to Josh Wiggler. I'll give Josh whatever he wants, and he knows that.
Okay.
He just has to say the word.
All right. So we'll see.
We can fiddle bamboo together as long as he wants.
Josh Wiggler.
Yeah. Okay. Then this is a question from Mike Brett. There's been a lot of discussion about whether an 18-year-old is mature / respected enough to be able to win Survivor. As someone that's played with an 18-year-old in Millennials versus Gen X, do you think that age is a disqualifying factor in a jury vote?
Not in the least. Michael, no one knows he's 18. So, and I think that's I don't know, probably good if it like makes him less anxious about being 18. But I think if Will made it to the end, Will would have definitely won. I would say the only thing that held back Will was his own anxiety about being 18. But Will was not like an 18-year-old. Will is tremendously intelligent, tremendously even-minded, had no problem getting along socially. Nobody ever thought of him as an 18-year-old. It would just, sometimes we would be like reminded like, oh dang, Will's 18. And then I would tease him about, you know, being his prom date.
Yeah. Should he have said that he was 21, 22? Do you think that he should have taken something from Michael's book here?
Well, I think the hard part about that is it sounds like Michael has a career, has a career and has experience outside of just being a high school student. Whereas Will had just sort of lived life as a high school student. He hadn't been to college. I don't think he could articulate, you know, a fake job just because he hadn't had enough life experience. So I think Will could have said he was 20 and that he was in college, but
would that have helped him?
I don't think being 18 hurt him at all. I think, like I said, the only time I ever saw Will have any anxiety about being 18 was in his confessionals, in which he was very concerned about being respected and not being thought of as a little kid. And he very, very much was respected and wasn't thought of as a little kid. That was in his own mind that anxiety was running.
Mm-hmm. You feel like that it was similar to Jacob last week, where he had the same sort of thing where that he had this insecurity about that he was in danger, and that's what ultimately was like a self-fulfilling prophecy for him?
Yeah, I think that you are often your own worst enemy out there. I feel that.
And sometimes in here.
And in here as well. I've been definitely in here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like both of the, you know, the anxiety that I was experiencing around the times that I got voted out in both seasons, that my own like feeling that like, A, I don't have a strong enough resume, or I'm paranoid and my allies are against me, that I sort of talked myself into my own trouble. And if I just sort of relaxed and didn't hype myself up so much, then I would have been in a lot better position.
Okay. Let's say Michael goes all the way, 39 days, final tribal council. Should he stand in front of the jury and say, hey, I have something to tell you guys. I'm not 23. I'm 18.
Well, I think the question is, does he need to? Does he feel like that's going to win him points? Does he have the resume? Does he have the game to win anyway? And I think if you have the game to win anyway, don't say it, because there's just as much of a chance that people won't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you feel like you got it in the bag, don't throw anything hinky in there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't feel like you have it in the bag and you're trying to give everybody a story, a reason to root for you, and you're trying to embitter people against the person who played the better game,
mm-hmm.
then yeah, sure, throw it out, see what works.
What do you think about the idea of just making something up at the final tribal council, where it's like, it doesn't even have to be anything that crazy, but it's like, you know, you go out there. And, you know, I say, you know, this whole time, I told you guys I was a podcaster, but I actually am an astronaut. I work for NASA, that I'm in the space program. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want you guys to vote me out the whole way, but that's true. And it's something I'm very proud of. And, you know, like, do you think we'll ever see that?
Someone like ran something fake there at the final tribal?
Yeah, somebody's going to make something up at the final tribal council.
Well,
like something that I had a secret the whole time. None of you guys knew what it was. And it was this. Would that person be the most hated survivor?
Well, I think that's
anything like, oh, my, like somebody is sick or.
But
anything.
See, I don't think that anyone would do something nominal like that, because it could only work against you. I think someone would make up some sort of like sob story. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's more likely that you would get a, you know, I'm so sorry, Johnny Fairplay, your grandmother died.
Yeah.
Like you would get something like that.
That could almost like people could resent that person in terms of like, oh, here comes they're playing the sympathy card. Like I feel like that somebody could like be turned. But I feel like if it's like something small where it's like, oh, they had me fooled the whole time. Like it's like I wouldn't feel stupid thinking that you were an astronaut.
I suppose it's like, what do you get out of it aside from it being funny?
Like, well, no, not just being funny, but I feel like that I wonder if the jury would be like, he had me fooled the whole time.
I don't know, because both times I went to Final Tribal, I think the vote was pretty much locked in.
Yeah.
I don't know that
it's
anyone's
not a live
mind.
Tribal.
Yeah, exactly. I said Tribal was live so many times and mm-hmm. it was not actually live, but that's the story that they wanted to tell.
I say coming to you live before every single podcast, and most of them are just are recorded and then we edit them.
Yeah, you liar. Cheat.
Sometimes we do video and it's live, but other times like
because it's also not an apartment.
I usually don't say coming to you live when it actually is live.
Yeah, do you say coming to you live at Know-It-Alls?
No, I say, yes, that's right.
That's right.
So it's all very tricky. Tyler...
Weigert?
No. I wish Tyler Weigert. He would have lots of good questions, certainly. But this is from...
Tyler Weigert?
No. Tyler Morton Karibo wants to know... Are we ready for Queen Libby to slay, or is there someone else ready to take that mantle?
To be the next Super Queen?
Yeah.
I got my Queen Kellen.
Queen Kellen
all the way.
Yes.
I love her energy. I love her vibe. I love the way that I think, you know, we have someone in Kellen who might rival me for my crown as puzzle champ.
Mm-hmm.
If we're looking for a queen to slay, Kellen all the way, baby.
Yeah. I've heard some people say that they thought that Libby could end up one day in an insane asylum and there'd be no explanation for it ever.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, these people have crackpot theories.
You know, if Libby kept her buddy Morgan, I would be a lot higher on Libby. But I think that sacrifice, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Okay, so you're not ready to crown Queen Libby?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I don't like the move. How could I?
But I thought it was a good story.
Oh, right.
It was a good story. I think that they said her. I think she's going to be a big character this season, Libby.
I hope so. I like Libby. I like her braids.
You like her braids?
Her braids, yes.
Yes.
And her brains as well.
Mm-hmm.
Her braids in particular.
I don't think you like her brains. You didn't like her move.
Well, I don't like the move. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I'm just trying to be nice.
She's only made one move on the show and you didn't like it.
I'm trying to be a positive, happy, affirming guy so that we don't send all of these cast members into therapy.
You told them not to listen.
But they're probably not listening to me.
Yeah. Well, who are they listening to?
I don't know. They're demons. They're inner demons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All the insecurity inside them, which made them want to go on reality television in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. So the same thing that leads people to the reality show makes them compelled to listen to the podcast also.
Well, right. Because I think that nobody goes on reality. Nobody... I would say can get through the reality casting process who is not a little bit obsessed with themselves,
mm-hmm.
are a lot of obsessed with themselves. Mm-hmm. And when people are talking about you or writing about you, there is something which you want to go see what they're saying, right? Because you want to go read about how brilliant you are, but really you're going to read about how much people hate you.
Yes.
Ooh.
Because I mean, but that's what part of the fun is, you know, watching these shows, you get to talk about how, the bad moves that people make.
Oh, totally. That is the fun of being a fan. And that's sort of what I have surrendered to now is I'm like, I'm not so you're two dimensional television characters for me and my fandom. And we're going to meet and I'll buy you drinks and I'll apologize for everything that I've said. I'll tell you that you were right and you were robbed and you should have won. And I didn't have all the information and I'm the idiot. When we meet in person, I will tell you all of those things. But for the purpose of participating in the fun of Survivor fandom, you're just a television character.
Yeah. Okay. David Baltazar wants to know, bigger faux pas, showing your immunity idol to your adversary or not recognizing a Spice Girl song?
Oh, God. That, you know what? That is the number. That's, I think that's the reason why I stopped watching Survivor last season. I got 3,000 tweets about how I didn't recognize Spice Girl song.
Yes.
I spent. Oh,
because oh. because people, kind of gave me a pass. Maybe a little less so for Josh, but they said, Zeke, you are a member of the LGBTQA community. Why didn't you know the Spice Girls song In the Wand Off upon hearing it? Why did you listen to Rob, who said he thought that this was an original composition?
I think I said it sounded familiar. But no, it was true. I had my gay card suspended for 3 months.
Three months.
I had to sleep with women.
What?
It was terrible.
You couldn't date?
I couldn't date men.
Yes.
I had to date women.
Yes.
It was atrocious. It was really bad.
Like a Black Mirror episode.
Right. The things that I had to do to get my card reinstated, you don't even want to know.
Okay. But you have done your probation and you're back.
It's been three months. Making up for lost time, baby.
It's been 3 months since then. Jordan Kalish, the great host of This Week in Survivor History.
I love Jordan Kalish.
Yes.
He used to come into Brooklyn and come to my Survivor viewing parties.
Yes. He said, as a super fan, what was your reaction to seeing Jamie Dugan, now Huffman, on the Survivor screens again? It was a real John Who's Who of Survivor this week.
Yeah, all that China footage. Jamie Dugan, is she the one who was so Christian she had to like walk away from the Buddhist ceremony that they used to open China?
Okay, I thought you were going to say something else. I believe that was Leslie Nice.
That was Leslie Nice. Okay. I guess I don't know. I was excited to see it back. I'm sorry. I'm not as tapped into the history as I used to be.
Yes. Okay. What happens? You forgot it all? You used all that memory to memorize every single location on Survivor?
Yeah, it was all replaced.
You had to write over it?
Yeah.
Well, that's what happened to me. I memorized all the Survivor stuff, and now if you showed me like pictures of people I went to high school or college with, I'd be like, who's that person?
Yeah,
I don't know that person. My brain is filled with all the different people from different Survivor seasons, but not the people that I actually met in real life.
Yeah, there you go. There was a time
a couple
of years ago where I probably could have done the China boot order top to bottom, but not right now.
Not right now. Not today.
Not today.
Terry wants to know, who is the most Zeke-like of the current cast? Do you see anybody that you feel like could be a Zeke-like player?
Zeke-like? Well, I hope not, because it's a good way to not win.
To not win.
To go out around the middle, but have a lot of airtime. Let me think. Well, I would say there are two people. I would say James and Kellen, both.
Mm-hmm.
Stick out to me as potential Zeke-like players because they're good talkers. I love Kellen's energy. I love her goofiness. We haven't really gotten a chance to see her play, so we don't know if she'll play well early in the game and then blow it all up later. But I think we've seen James has the potential to play a little too big too early. So yeah, I think both of them.
Okay.
Well, and of course, Sebastian's got the Zeke shirt, so we got to put him in the running.
Put him in the mix. Throw them all together. Zeke, my research tells me you were the oldest male on the Millennial Tribe.
That's correct.
You wear that as a badge of honor?
I do. I was the alpha male at that camp, I started the fire, I built the shelter. I did all the big boy stuff.
Yes. What camp would I have to be in to be the alpha male?
I don't know. Aren't you the alpha male of RHAP?
I guess so. Well,
I mean, Nicole is the alpha female.
Sure.
Right. But
sure.
If we're saying, alpha male, then, mm-hmm. Right, you're pretty macho sometimes.
I'm up there.
Compared to the other podcast boys.
Nope, we're not saying that. Please don't get me in trouble here today, Z. Look, we're not here to hurt people's feelings.
No, not at all.
Unlike the Survivor players, we didn't give a warning to podcast hosts. Okay.
Right.
How about this question from Jessica, who wants to know, what do you think of Libby saying that she's not just a pretty face? Were others already on to her, or did she draw attention to herself as a strategist? So there was that moment in the episode where Jeff had asked her about being deceptive, and it was like her eyes lit up that she got to talk about, people think that I'm not going to lie because I'm just look like a nice person, but I can't wait.
Yeah. There is I would say this is part of how you get cast, is you like to shine. You like to find the spotlight. You're sitting at Tribal and Jeff's talking to you. And, when you're doing well, when Jeff likes what you're saying, he really lets you know about it. And Jeff is sort of your father out there, and you want to please your father, and you can get taken by it a little bit. You want to announce your story in the same way that Jacob said they fell right into my plan. And I think you gotta resist that urge because Jeff wants you to. Jeff wants you to slip up. Jeff wants you to say something that's going to change the vote, right? So you got to be careful of that deceptive, dimply smile. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe Libby got a little caught up there.
So all of the survivors, they clamor for Jeff's attention.
Yes.
And Jeff's love.
That's true.
And so...
And you don't want to be... I will tell you this from Game Changers. You do not want to be the person who gets it. Like,
yeah.
It is upsetting to the other players, particularly if you're in an all-star season. If you're the one Jeff is doting on, it, mm-hmm. it messes with you game-wise.
Yes. So Dad sits there and says, all right, who else has something to tell me? And so, and the person that, like, their eyes light up, then they go, and they will put their foot in their mouth.
Yeah. Or I think...
And then Jeff is waiting there to pounce, like, what did you mean by that?
Yeah, or wait to see who reacts to it.
Yes.
Right? Because Jeff sees all... he must have, like, a million eyes. It's really incredible what he does at Tribal.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have all of these people, and he has a perfect gauge on everyone's emotional state, on the information that people are going to, like, give, and who, I think... wants to feel like a star that night, and
yeah.
he will milk that for every ounce he can.
Felipe Shimon wants to know, as the only person who got to see the legacy advantage play out on season 33, did you consider that it could have been on season 34? And on a related note, how much did Jessica tell the jurors about it?
Well, I think that Jessica told...
I think we must have touched on this before, but give us the refresher.
We have. I think we knew everything about the legacy advantage. Jessica was very upfront about all of the rules to the jury. I was asked about what were the twists in 33. When I was on 34, I talked about the legacy advantage. I guess the thing that we have touched on is, you know, the legacy advantage is not like a super huge, awesome advantage. It only plays out at one tribal council. So why be worried about the legacy advantage?
Because it exists.
You know, I didn't. Whatever.
Okay. So you're loving this season.
Loving the season.
You're going to keep watching this.
Yeah, I am. I mean, we'll see how how the Twitter response affects me emotionally.
To this podcast.
To this podcast. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Just if you have something negative to say, don't tag me in it.
Right.
Talk all the trash you want to. I'm not going to search by name. You don't need to tag me in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is a conversation that sometimes, and I try not to get into it, but I see other people that I podcast with sometimes will participate in this conversation of, yeah, like, I didn't like this thing, and then they go on and on and on.
Yeah, exactly. And if you say something negative to me, I'll just block you.
Yo, you go to the instant block.
Oh yeah, I'm hair trigger on the block.
Hair trigger.
I have no patience. Or I'll mute you, which is, I mean, then I just won't like or respond to anything.
You don't get
you say.
That satisfaction of.
But I like. I prefer to block people than to mute.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't go with the hair trigger on the block.
Well, I would say yes, because cultivating like this fan community is
yes.
part of your livelihood.
So you say that I'm the outlier in terms of because of what I do. But if I was a normal person, I would block faster.
I think probably.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. But I also I have and basically always have Reddit blocked on all of my devices so that I can't even look at it.
Yeah.
Same with a lot of like the other fan sites as well. Cause I'll look at it if I can, but if I can't look at it, then it's like out of sight, out of mind. I don't worry about it. Like for Game Changers, I gave my Twitter and my Instagram to my friends mm-hmm. and deleted it off my phone and blocked it on my other devices. And then just didn't think about social media I think it was probably like 5 or 6 weeks before I had to look at social media. But it was great because it made my life so much better to be unburdened with the constant yammering of people.
Well, I feel like that there is some irony to, I feel like, a criticism of you that I felt like that there was all this idea of that you were somehow like very much attached. And I feel like that Sierra had this before you of the only wants to talk about big moves. Only that's Zeke only wants to. But I feel like that in talking with you that and in knowing you, I think that you're more interested in the characters and the stories and the people that are involved with the show. Even talking about this vote, you're saying that, you know, like you're probably better off here. It's day seven. Slow down here, everybody. You have Angela, who you could have just gotten rid of. Nobody would have been mad. They went with a bigger move. And you're saying that you think that was wrong.
Yeah. I would also say that, you know, I have changed and grown and learned a lot in the past 2 years since I played Survivor. I think that, you know, I'm also someone who has zero desire to play again. And for most of the years that I was a Survivor fan, I thought about strategy and I thought about moves and I thought about what I would want to do on Survivor. And now I no longer think that way. I think about how can I appreciate Survivor, the television show, which is what I came out of Survivor with such a deep appreciation for, that I don't think I really appreciated how great a television Survivor is because I was wrapped up in other things. So, yeah, I mean, sure, I think I've always been team big moves. I think I've also...
You should just come out and be like, just like tweet like, so when are these survivors going to make more big moves? Like with like 100
exclamation
points.
Lots of Z's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think I've also learned a lot more about how Survivor is played well, particularly, you know, watching Sarah navigate that entire game. And, you know, I too am growing and evolving, changing in my interest, right?
Yes.
But I think, you know, I'm also someone who I've always believed that the game is played in four quarters, but really two distinct halves, the pre-merge and the merge. And I never did anything interesting in the pre-merge phase.
It's interesting. I don't feel like I've ever heard the game described that way before. So, okay. So four quarters and two halves. So are you look at like the like where the swap is at the end of the first quarter?
Yeah, it's tricky in these seasons where we're going to have, I think, two swaps. But you want to get through like the first initial phase of we're just voting out the weak and the weird. Then I think there's like a quick spike where people are going to make a big move or two in the pre-merge.
So you feel like that it really does match up to a football game where you feel like that there could be like not a lot of action. And then the last 2 minutes of the first half, you think that we could see like there's a lot of scoring right before the 2 minute warning of the merge.
No, I actually think there is a lot of scoring right at the end of the first quarter. And at the top of the second quarter. But as we get closer to halftime,
so right after
everybody draws back, everybody like, because everyone just wants to make the merge,
come out of the tunnel a little groggy,
right? So you kind of draw back,
yeah.
And same is that it's pretty quiet when we start the second half, and then as we get towards the loved, like then it spikes in action. But as we get towards the loved ones visit again, people pull back because people just want to reach these milestones. They want to reach the merge. They want to reach the loved ones visit, and then after you get to the loved ones visit, it's pedal to the metal.
Should they move the loved ones visit up?
Sure. Then I think they would. Well, because it's interesting because out there, this doesn't ever really make the story, but the loved ones visit is this big chip that people play with, that we're going to be, you and me, we're going to be good until the loved ones visit. I won't guarantee you final three, but you and me, we're good to the loved ones visit. Or people also are like, I just really need to see my, you know, brother. He's never been on an airplane before, and I just want to give him this, and then you can vote me, but I just got to see my brother. People really use it as a bargaining chip, and people also really want to make the loved ones visit. But then after it's out of the way, then people play a little harder. But I don't know if that's because people actually care that much about the loved ones visit, or it's just a nice mid-merge marker.
Yes, or it's another reason to not vote me out of the game.
Right.
Okay. Zeke, what else? So actually, going back to football, do you, I know you were a college football fan. Do you follow professional football?
A little bit. I'm actually, I won my fantasy league the past 2 years.
Do you have
in
a professional football team that you root for?
I grew up a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Yes.
And I'm sort of a Cowboys fan. I haven't stayed that attached to them, but no, I'm actually a free agent, pro team wide.
A free agent, a free radical?
A free radical, right?
Gotta get rid of them.
But I'm thinking about becoming a Rams fan.
A Rams fan. That's
considering
very trendy. That you have no attachment. You could come in and be a get probably good seats, an exciting team.
Right.
They make a lot of big moves on offense. You like that?
I do. I love a big move. I think they're about to make a big move uniform wise, which they should.
Oh, what are they going to do?
Well, they changed the helmets, and I think they're going to throw back to the original LA Rams, a look similar to the original LA Rams uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But the NFL has this rule that uniforms can't change. There has to be like a 3-year period between every uniform change.
Yes. So, and they're going to go make new LA Ram uniforms.
Yeah. And they're getting a new, are they getting a new stadium? Or they're just, they're in the Coliseum right now.
Yes, they are getting
a garbage hole. That
is. They are getting a new stadium. Should they consult with Josh Wigler to design the new Rams uniforms?
Absolutely. No one has their finger closer on the pulse of fashion than Josh Wigler.
Hats, helmets,
all sorts of sporting equipment. Well, because, you know, Josh knows everything about football.
Mm-hmm.
Deep cut football fan.
Yeah, well, he doesn't really know a lot about football to come up with a good uniform.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to be rooting for the Rams.
Rooting for the Rams, but I'm also open to arguments for other teams. I don't think I'm ever going to become a Jets fan.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't.
Because I was living in New York and was a big Rex Ryan fan post his season of Hard Knocks. So I was really rooting for the Jets, and then...
Yes, gosh. Why Rex Ryan? Why were you a fan of him?
Well, he's from Oklahoma.
Okay.
So there's, you know, Oklahoma roots, and he's a big, fun character as well.
He's a big,
and I curse a lot, and like other people who curse a lot.
He's a fun guy. He's good on ESPN, but you don't want him anywhere near your football team.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And since we spoke back in June on the last, we talked Survivor back last June.
Yes, I did my long form.
You moved out to LA. Everything is good?
Yeah, I moved out to LA, drove across the country. I was very resistant initially and was very... upset I was not in New York. I was like, oh, LA is not New York. But
you
now,
miss Jordan Kalish?
I miss Jordan Kalish. You know, he's got great Survivor history anecdotes. I wouldn't have flubbed his question where I'm still hanging out with him. But I think that the longer I've lived in LA, the more I appreciate being here when it's 72 degrees and it's a snow hell.
Sweet,
back in
right.
LA, back in New York right now.
Like they have storms there now.
Bomb
that they
cyclones.
Didn't, yeah.
Bomb
cyclones. Like, I never even heard. There's they like never new... had that before. Like the they're reinventing the way weather is happening. the weather is evolving.
Yeah. So it's really great to be here. But also I found myself, the longer I live here, the more and more I'm like open to LA things that I was always so
like
derisive of. Like I let a man perform Reiki on me at a fundraiser in December.
What is it? Can we say that on the podcast? What it is that this man?
This is
podcast.
So Reiki is, I think, the process of using like heat to cleanse the chakras. And the way he did it was he like, you know, rubbed his hands together and he got him hot. And then he sort of, you know, wanded me like you would he wanded me like you would get wanded down by the TSA if you made the metal detector beep,
okay,
right?
so you're now wanded off,
right? Well, he was searching, I think, for where all of the pain was,
okay,
and decided that the pain was over my heart.
Yes.
And then he used his hands to kind of, I think, cup and squeeze my pectoral muscles repeatedly to cleanse all of the pain from my heart. And it was kind of weird that this guy kept like, you know, feeling me up in the middle of this fundraiser.
Yes.
I found it funny and thought also, if he's taking my pain away, then, you know, have at it. It's only later that I would learn that you're not supposed to touch people when performing Reiki. So that's okay.
But did he do anything? Is that why you were able to come on this podcast?
I think he lifted...
Are you able to go on Reddit?
No.
Not yet.
And why
you
would you?
To touch
why
free
would you go visit that cesspool? Like, why would you even go look at the Survivor?
There's very nice people there.
No, they're not.
They're
all horrible.
There's very good people there.
But no, I do. I think he cleansed some darkness from my soul, and he even opened me up to a couple of weeks ago. I was at Aubrey Bracco's house having dinner, and she wanted me to read astrology books.
Yes,
and I read astrology books, and I was even like, I was like, you know what? I'm finding insight into myself.
LA thing, astrology?
Well, I feel like all this like hippy dippy stuff is very LA, astrology and Reiki. And
what about me? Have I changed or I'm too far out in the valley?
Well, I think you're too far out in the valley. It's just like suburbs. Also, I never really knew you when you lived in New York. I don't know that we ever crossed New York paths.
Yeah, well, I did the first time the one time I really had met you was in New York.
It was
in
New York.
The Javits Center.
It was.
Yes.
But I think you lived.
But I did live in LA.
Yeah, you met Zeke, I think, about 50 pounds heavier and without a mustache.
Yes, without a mustache. And yes, I don't think I'm that different.
I don't know. You're Hare Krishna, right? Like,
yes.
But little do you know that Rob's house is actually a cult house, and everyone here has long hair and beads and, you know, sages everything.
Yeah. So I don't think I'm not too LA'd out, right?
I, You don't seem too LA'd out to me.
I try to keep it real, Zeke.
But I think, you know, you're connected with the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a global show, the rest of the world. True.
Yeah.
So I think the patrons and the fans, they keep you to your roots.
Right. I'm not in my little L.A. bubble.
Exactly. That's you don't right. live in the middle of like West Hollywood like I do.
I'm in the Survivor bubble. That's it. All right. Well, Zeke, we need a hashtag for today.
Okay, hashtag, oh goodness.
Hashtag free radical.
Hashtag free radical.
Or is that too, that's not fun enough?
I don't know that's fun enough. Hashtag, what about sunrise poops?
Sunrise poops, okay. Sure.
Is that too gnarly? Doody, 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 doody.
That's your friend Debbie.
Oh, love Debbie.
You do love Debbie?
Yeah, Debbie... You know, Debbie's, you know, so interesting.
Would Debbie ever do the podcast?
I think potentially. Yeah,
she was on my list. I'll show you my board out there of my prospective podcast guests. And I make a list at the beginning of the season. I'm like, boy, I would love to talk to Debbie, but I don't know if she would partake.
I think she potentially would. Maybe if not this season, then next season, because, you know, you need some time
distance.
Off. But the thing I always found so difficult about not difficult in a bad way, but difficult from a strategic perspective. Was that, you know, just Debbie does have all the stories about all of her jobs, and she has these moments where she's larger than life and shaking her butt and pretending to be drunk and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But Debbie also has these moments where she is so kind and so caring. And in my sort of like saddest, loneliest moments, it was always Debbie who seemed to recognize that I needed someone to give me a little maternal love. And she always provided it. She was always top notch. So I haven't kept in touch with Debbie because I don't keep in touch with a lot of people, but you know, there's a really soft spot in my heart for Debbie.
Okay. And then you hang out with David Wright still.
Yep. Well, yes, I hang out with David Wright.
Not Dave Johnson.
Not Dave Johnson.
Yeah.
So happy to meet you, Dave Johnson. Send me a picture.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice to know what he's up to.
Right. Exactly.
That would be good. And you are doing still Spartan races?
Still Spartan races. Dave and I completed our first of the 2018 season, our super. And then we've got our Beast on May 19th.
Beast. Right?
Yes, it's the hardest one. It's the longest one. We did one in Lake Tahoe in, I think, September, and it was the hardest single physical thing.
But what are you trying to prove with this?
That you're
better than me? Than everybody?
Oh, Rob, I don't need to run Spartan races to prove that. No, I think, honestly, the reason why I do it is that I would like to, I'm not right now, but someday I would like to be back in the shape I was when I was on Survivor, or ideally in better shape.
Which season were you in better shape?
Oh, Millennials versus Gen X, for sure, because I had all this muscle mass.
Yeah.
When I went back for Game Changers, I'd just been eating nonstop for 3 weeks, and I didn't regain the muscle. Yeah. I just was super chubby because my metabolism was all messed up. But no, when I know that I'm going to be doing these races, it causes me to go to the gym, not only because I want to do well at the race, but also... So Dave and I love Dave. We're great friends, but there is always an underlying competitiveness right with us.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a bit. Dave beats me every time. He always performs much better than I do. But, you know, one day I want to run the better race.
Do you think it's amazing that David Wright, the Survivor, is now a better athlete than David Wright, the baseball player?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's very impressive.
Dave's a great athlete.
Yeah.
But he was a marathoner before Survivor. Yeah. That's the thing is, like, never believe anything that Dave says. Dave is not like the anxious weakling you think he is. He's a very strong, confident guy.
Yes. He's tricking you.
Yes. Dave's always playing.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to touch on, or you wanted me to release you?
If you are in the Boston area,
yes.
I'm speaking at BU on April 5th. And so if you want to come, I've given a handful of talks, and Survivor fans always come, and I have to give my talk on whatever the topic is of the group that brought me. And this topic is mental health related. So I'll be talking about my experiences with depression and anxiety, but you can always come and ask questions about Survivor, because we always end up talking about Survivor.
Will you be performing Reiki on anybody in Boston?
Any well-muscled gentleman who wants me to perform Reiki on him, I'm more than happy to
do so. Go back to that Reiki story. Did you feel violated then after that you found out that the Reiki master was not supposed to be touching you?
Well, the gentleman who approached me was intoxicated and clearly flirting with me in the first place.
So you let a drunk man perform Reiki on you, and you think it might have just been he was hitting on you, and it was not actually a Reiki master. That's like his shtick.
Well, so I think, so his husband, I think he was recruiting me to come join him and his husband, which is something I do rather regularly.
They had this is called a polyamorous relationship.
Well, I would say maybe you could just say it's a gay relationship. Okay. It's open that they're inviting new friends to come and join their marital activities
and do Reiki.
Yes, I think. Well, because I think
that's code.
Yes. Well, I didn't see. New to LA. Now I'm learning the lingo.
Yes.
I understand.
Do that, Reiki is code.
Yes.
Okay. That should be the hashtag.
Do Reiki. I think it's better than Sunrise Poops. Let's do. I like do Reiki. Hashtag do Reiki.
All right. How do you spell Reiki?
Oh, I would need to Google it.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Okay. It's so great to see you. I'm so happy that you seem like you're in a really great place.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
I'm not talking about your apartment.
My apartment's okay.
Yeah.
Look, I'm
not
doing,
as nice as the apartment used to set fires in.
Well, it's bigger, but not as nice.
Okay.
Survivor really was this tremendous experience. And I am one of the few people who can say Survivor really completely changed my life.
Yes.
My life is 180 degrees different than it was 2.5 years ago. But it was challenging. It was awesome. And we got through it and we got to the other end. And now my life is so much better than it used to be. And I feel really grateful for that. And I feel like I have changed and grown so much as a person and am continuing to do so. So I have no complaints, Rob. I'm a very happy guy.
So I was so happy when you reached out and said, you know what? I want to come in. We got good feedback on Celebrity Big Brother, and I want to come in. I want to come in and do a podcast episode. And I said, "Great! I'm so happy. Let's put it on the board."
We did it. We put it on the board, the SNL board.
And do you regret it?
No, I think it's fine. I don't feel like I need to talk to my therapist about this podcast.
Okay,
episode.
Good, good.
I mean, just yet. So take it easy on the Twitter, guys.
And will you look at Twitter after this or not?
Yeah, I mean, I can't help it.
You can't help it.
Yeah, because also,
so positive support would be welcome.
You don't even have to say nice things. You could just say nothing at all.
You could just say nothing, and you'll get it.
Or like I said, say negative stuff. Just don't tag me.
That's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. Because you don't do like a search for your name.
No. Well, because just like, you know, I came on here and wanted to talk about the players in a two dimensional way.
Do a search for my name. Should I look at that or no?
Yeah, you can try.
Yeah, the people that are talking about me, but then they didn't tag me on this.
But I also understand because I'm a fan of this community. You also want to consume the podcast in the way that you consume the television show.
Yeah.
So you want to have commentary about me. That's fine. And just like, you know, don't tag players if you have negative things to say.
Yeah, I know. People, I see a lot of that. People, Steven talks about that.
There's no reason. Yeah. It's not like you're going to change anything about me.
Yeah. One time I looked up my name on Twitter and then I saw somebody was like saying something about me. And then I I either commented or I favorited the tweet. And then the guy wrote back like, "You're such a loser.
You're
didn't even tag you.
Yeah,
you looked up your own name. You're such a loser." And I had no comeback for that. There was nothing I could say.
Yeah, I think I have searched for my name and then blocked people once I saw it, even though they didn't tweet at me.
Yeah.
And then they're like, "Why did you block me?"
Yeah, nobody. My last name is too hard. See, I don't have a nice, easy name to spell like Smith.
Plus, aren't you right all the time? Like, do people ever tweet negative stuff at you?
I mean, I get negative stuff, but it's most of it is not, you know, particularly hateful.
Ah,
you know,
but there you go.
And somebody who writes a negative thing about me, their next tweet could be something that's more that's not as negative.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, we've been lucky so far. Okay.
We've been at it for what, 17 seasons?
a long time. All right, Zeke, always a pleasure.
We've got
so much more coming up. We have our feedback show coming up. Simone Wynn will be here over the weekend. Have you ever met Simone?
No, I have not.
Okay, well, she will be in here. She was on the Love Know-It-Alls a couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
yes.
I could be on the Lust Know-It-Alls.
The Lust Know-It-Alls. Okay, well we will pitch Steven on that one.
Or heck, I could be your co-host.
Yes, okay. So if Steven backs out of the Love Know-It-Alls.
Right, and you want to replace it.
All right, who wants to do Reiki? Boom.
Yeah. You want to know how to, you know, effectively date six guys at the same time.
Six at the same time.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Boy, I don't know. I don't even know if somebody would want that.
Yeah, I decided I didn't want it, so I called the herd. But again, that's some good advice that I could give.
Yes. All right. So that would be very exciting if we had that. So get your voicemails in for Simone. And then Josh Wiggler and I will get into the Wiggle Room come Monday to get those Wand Off songs in.
I know, for a chance to win the best hat you will ever own.
Yes, for a chance to win that amazing Josh Wiggler hat.
You know what? I don't like the disdain with which you just said amazing.
Why? Where are you getting disdain from?
I can see it in your face.
I said that this is an amazing hat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Rob.
Okay. All right. And then be sure to send me that picture of you out in public with the hat tonight.
You know I will.
Okay. All right. Don't just wear it like for a photo op. Okay. Thanks so much, Scott St. Pierre, for putting this all together. Looking forward to hearing what you get to say in the comments on social media, assuming it's, not hateful.
Yep.
Okay. And take care, everybody. Have a good one.
Bye.